Blog Talk Radio.
Running like a well-oiled machine, this is a special Saturday edition of the WWE for February the 18th, 2017. I'm Money, the best Cold War warrior of them all. Ivan Koloff passed away yesterday, and we'll talk about that both here and I guess it was today. Anyway, both here and on Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, the second part for VIP members. First part is already up. So something to look forward to, something, you know, anyway, something some of you listen to, and you get details on how to listen to that during this show. If you're listening on the PW Torch livecast and you're not a VIP member, if you're a VIP member, you know, that part, those parts are removed. So I'd say equally as well. Yeah, pretty much as big a star, George the Animal Steele. Passed away too, and add in Nicole Bass, who was a consequence, I guess, of the Attitude Era in a lot of ways, and had a rough life, and she passed away too this week. So three professional wrestlers. I will say this, and I don't mean to be flippant about it, but I don't believe in the rule of threes, because the way life is, people pass away, and you wait long enough, in whatever category you're thinking of, celebrity, non-celebrity, whatever it is, you wait long enough, you'll get three in the same category. Doesn't take long. Let's roll to our friend Rich. Rich, welcome to PW Torch Livecast, finally.
Oh, thank you for having me, and I'm glad everything's working out on the technological end as well.
Yeah, just about everything, yep. So, and I do want to apologize. Yesterday, we had some equipment failure, some bad equipment failure, and that's what happened with this. So everything should be up to speed now. So we should be in good shape. How are you about Ivan Koloff and George the Animal Steele? What are your memories of these two?
George, really, as my buddy Joe mentioned, him eating the turnbuckle and being obsessed with Elizabeth was really my biggest memories from him. And Ivan, really, I don't have many, to be honest. I had him in that general block of Soviet bad guys, but I think by the time he was big, like with him and Sheik and all that, I was tangentially interested, but I was more interested in Nikita once I had the opportunity to kind of compare the Koloffs, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is, as I've been reminded today being on Twitter, a lot of and social media, a lot of this is just the generation of wrestling fans you are, or the age that you are, because there's a lot of people that, of course, Ivan Koloff settled in. So yeah, Ivan Koloff, but Ivan Koloff, you know, was famous for, in the beginning of his career, going to Madison Square Garden and challenging Bruno Sammartino, the unbeatable Bruno Sammartino, and maybe providing the most shocking moment in Madison Square Garden, that in WWF, but in anything that happened in the Garden, I didn't include Willis Reed walking out. He was a serious threat, but Bruno never lost, and Bruno wanted to lose and get a better schedule, get a less strenuous schedule, because he was just worn out from how much he was booked as the WWF champion, and they were going to bring in Pedro Morales to be to appeal to the Puerto Rican fan base in New York and in major markets, and he was going to beat Ivan Koloff. So Ivan Koloff came off the top rope and pinned Bruno Sammartino, and the place went deadly silent. And they didn't announce Ivan, and Ivan's career was made at that moment, and they didn't announce Ivan as the WWF champion. They didn't hand him the belt. they just got up and got the hell out of Dodge as fast as they could because they were really concerned about what would happen. So he, you know, he went and he feuded with Vern Gagne in the AWA, which is the top guy in the AWA, including a Comiskey, Comiskey ballpark for the White Sox, big stadium show, Comiskey Stadium show, and teamed with, you know, very famous team with superstar Billy Graham there, feuded with Dusty Rhodes in Georgia and in Florida, teamed with, came to the Carolinas and was a top heel with against Paul Jones. I mean, everywhere he went, he was a top guy and pretty, you know, a little bit smaller, but really people were scared of him. I mean, I was like, and there was also all the heat on the Cold War, so that really helped him. So, okay, good. And George Animal Steel, you know, the part you're talking about with Randy Savage, that was definitely toward the end of his career. But that was the time when I thought, this man was really smart, because I just thought, George Steel, I remember watching that Saturday Night's Main Event where Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik turned on him, and it wasn't much of a match. It was a cool little skit, and I was just like, what in the world? Then I saw the dolls, the George the Animal Steel dolls, and he took this guy who was about to retire and got some money out of him and made him into this cult figure, babyface, and he was paid better at that point in his career than I think he'd ever been before, and he had been a main eventer in the Northeast for all that time. So that was pretty interesting. That was, you know, he stayed in, you know, and I have a little bit of a connection to him in that I don't know if I'm in the wrestling business, but, you know, sideline with wrestling and then teaching during the school year, and that's what he was known for. It's, you know, and his, you know, the way the world was, he taught in Detroit. He was a football coach like you are, and high school football coach, and then he would spend the summers touring as George the Animal Steel, making extra money and making good money. And then he would leave, and people didn't know where he went, and none of his students knew that he did any of this, and he would make out both ways. So kind of had the better of both worlds. You ready for? Well, before I say that, I'll set a plug, and then we'll be right back with phone calls.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, we're back. Let's go to it. I appreciate everybody sticking with us on a special Saturday night edition of the PW Torch Livecast. Tiffany Rich, thank you. And let's thank our first caller, unless he's about to give me a hard time. Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to Saturday night and the PW Torch Livecast.
How you doing today, Bruce? How you doing today, Rich?
Good. Good, good, good.
Well, okay. Same here, just coming from seeing the movie Fist Fight. So, with teachers.
Cool.
I guess both of y'all are.
Cool. Yeah, I heard it was funny. Shahid actually mentioned he saw it last night. So I'm looking forward to trying.
Oh, Fist Fight. Oh, my God. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I teach in elementary school.
Very funny movie.
The women could beat me up, but I'm less likely to get in a fight with another teacher. So, although there was one time I was close.
Well, I'm going to start y'all off with a couple of questions. My first question and a half is about people getting everybody on the WrestleMania card. I know they're rumoring to have two women's matches that's going to be maybe fatal four ways, which I feel like that's not right for somebody like Charlotte, who they're building up her pay-per-view streak. And if she should lose, it should be in a one-on-one match, especially since they're talking about a revolution. Do you feel like that should be, and should they always feel like they have to get everybody on the card? That's my first question, and I have one more.
All right, Rich, you want to start us off?
Sure. Well, Darrell, I think one of the things with the idea of, in a perfect world, sure, I would want a singles match, but I think with the ballyhoo they got in NXT, pushing toward the three-way of Bayley, Sasha, and Charlotte isn't the worst idea in the world. If it were them shoehorning, say, Ava Marie or something like that, I'd absolutely say that's ridiculous. But given the relationship all three women have had, it makes sense, especially as you said, they want to kind of get everyone on the card.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with Rich about that match. If that's where they're going, and that seems the most likely scenario right now. And I don't know, and I still don't know why Bayley won the title Monday night in a good match, but I'm not sure what that was about. But yeah, I mean, I think that match will be featured strongly enough that all three will benefit no matter where they go with it. And I know what the plans were a few months ago as far as that went, and we'll see whether that's it. But I think you can have your WrestleMania moment with the women with that. As far as the other, matches, you know, I kind of go back and forth about this, but if you're going to have a 7-hour show, whatever the hell WrestleMania is going to end up being, then there's no excuse for not getting as many people on the show as possible, particularly when it's seen as, you know, you have to. It's seen as, whether you're on the show or not, you have to be there. You have to spend money to be there, as far as expenses go, and bring your family. You're supposed to bring your family and all that kind of thing. And if you're not on the and there's this feeling if you're not on the show that you don't have any forward, and understandably so, that your career is not going very well. So they tried to accommodate that and make it that event. So there's certain things that they can do, including the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. There's it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the women. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I would imagine we get some sort of tag match to accommodate that. And as long as it doesn't – as long as all these extras don't interfere with the length of the important matches, as long as you've got – and the flow of the show, I've got no problem with it. But I am – there's another part of me that's conservative and just says you should have the best show possible for the money that people are spending, whether it's $9.99 or whatever it is to get it on old pay-per-view, and that doesn't. And if it doesn't mean that if someone doesn't get on the show, then that's, you know, as far as like a performer goes or a wrestler goes, so what? But in this case, yeah, I think they've got enough time to enough preview shows and all that kind of stuff to make sure that the two active rosters get in, and maybe a few from NXT too. I still think they ought to do a feature match from NXT, and you know, I'm sure we'll get one from 205. So, Darrell, what else do you have?
Yeah, I feel the same way about you guys, but I just feel like, just like in the Super Bowl, everybody who on both Super Bowl teams don't get to play, and that's the most prized thing in the NFL. So everybody shouldn't get the wrestle. That should be something that you work yourself up to and make them get you on the card. But my second question is, because, Bruce, I know you were talking about the Randy Orton Bray Wyatt feud. I feel like people have been talking themselves up into this feud because Randy can't say that he planned for Bray to win in the Elimination Chamber, also that he planned to win the Rumble. So he can't say that he's been planning to do all this to break them up. And also he hasn't been showing nobody that he wanted to break up the Wyatt family. He came in, did everything that was asked of him. Luke got mad because new little brother came in and started getting more love than him. And then they made Bray Wyatt into a babyface after Tuesday. So how can you make this into a feud if you're going to try to say that Randy Orton breaking this up when he's just been playing good soldier?
Rich, didn't I tell you that he was going to give me a hard time? Didn't
yep.
I say that? I did. There's some ways around that, and and you make some very good points. I'll say that, particularly with, you know, he didn't know he was going to win the Rumble, and he didn't know that, Randy didn't know he was going to win the Rumble. Bray Wyatt didn't know that he was going to, he couldn't have known that Bray Wyatt would win the Elimination Chamber. But, you know, if you're going in undercover, you're looking for those weak points to push at. The first one was Luke Harper, and he, he got Luke Harper away from the family, and he pushed that point of Luke Harper's jealousy. Then he sees, the chance to win at the Royal Rumble because he's still Randy Orton, and then everything falls into place for him with Bray Wyatt doing what Bray Wyatt's doing, and so then he kneels down and all that. We're going to get that match. It's just a matter of how they get there And it's a matter of what kind of story they want to tell. But I think that the story I'm talking about of the secret agent going undercover to outsmart Bray Wyatt and ruin the family, I think that could still be in play. I haven't seen enough out there. But yeah, you know, when you go be a double agent, you wait for that point where you can do the most damage from the inside. So that's kind of my rationalization for that. But like I said, you've got some points. Rich, you want to chime in on this?
Sure. And I think, I don't know if you have yet, Darrell, I would listen to Bruce's part one of his VIP with Wade because he talks about that a little bit. And I would say a lot of it is set up so that either Randy's going to be in a position where he has to betray Bray or Bray betrays Randy and dissolves the dirtship or whatever ridiculous phrase they came up with. I think that's the key. If something emerges, the old GTV footage of something, you know, in the back, or Bray says something to Luke that irks Randy now in turn. If something like that gets the wheels in motion, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, we'll see where all that. I kind of gave another theory too that I thought might be a possibility. So, as Wade said, as Wade Keller said, who's hosting the first hour, it seems that I'm more positive about this storyline than a lot of people. But I remain so. I very much did like the Randy Orton coming out and JBL going, you know, it's going to be this big great match and making you kind of want to see it, and or at least trying to. And then Orton bowing down and kneeling in front of the cult leader, I thought was really well played. I just think that they're building up something where people are going to want it before they announce it, instead of just going straight to it. And I think that that's pretty good stuff. I'm interested to see, and it's certainly not guaranteed. I'm interested to see how Bray Wyatt does with this new, new emphasis and hopefully some, anyway, just going, getting elevated to the top of the card. I mean, we'll see. So, Darrell, anything else or any comment on that?
My comment is, after Tuesday, I feel like Bray Wyatt is a babyface. And if you have Randy, all of a sudden, after showing all this allegiance, he didn't really push Luke Harper to the side. Luke Harper pulled Seth Rollins and got mad that Daddy didn't choose me and give me more love. So that made me feel like Luke Harper was the heel, but they portraying him as a babyface. Then Bray Wyatt came out and did the Roman Reigns thing and overcame the obstacles, then jumped before the match, having to compete against two people and still win, and the fans cheer him even more. So if Randy do turn on him, that's a heel turn, almost like what you seen with Kevin Owens, and I don't think they wanted to make him into a heel. So I would just say just ride it out, and let's see if you can make Bray Wyatt into the big baby face that
I think you've got a point with beating John Cena, beating AJ Styles again, but I also think that Randy Orton, no one wants to see Randy Orton. I don't think fans who see him as a star want to see him bow down to anybody, much less Bray Wyatt. And so that part, I think, puts some heel heat back on Bray Wyatt. And I have no problem with him winning, getting these strong wins, because that's what they need to do. They need to, he's a major player, so they need to go ahead and make him a major player, doing as strong as they can. Let's go to Ontario, Canada. Welcome to PW Torch Livecast. Let's
Hello?
Try this. 614? Yes. We hear it. Yeah, you're on.
No, it's Jason from Australia. How you going?
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. Excuse me, Jason. No wonder. Okay.
Now you're all right.
We learned the truth. After all these months, Jason has secretly been living in Canada and moving his way closer to the United States.
This is what our president's been warning us about. So, yeah, I can see.
Next time he calls, he's going to be calling from inside your house, Bruce, so watch out.
There you are. So, what you got, Jason?
Oh, no. Oh, no, my cover is blowing. How could you, Rich?
No.
Yes.
Nice. That's some James Ellsworth level acting there, Jason. Very nice.
Okay. Now, just for saying that, I am going to rock up to your house. I'm going to pay the necessary plane fees. That is the worst thing you've ever said to me. That is
I've said some bad things to you,
said.
Too, over the, and tweeted some bad things to you over the course of these times. Now, you wouldn't happen to be the guy
and you know
who,
what?
Or girl or whoever. I mean, someone years ago, it's been over 10 years, during the Monday Night Wars, I come up on my steps and there's this huge package of posters of WWF stars. I mean, it just rolled up in a rubber band and left at my step. And I'm just like, what the hell is this? And I still to this day never found out who did that. So you wouldn't be the first stalker that I've encountered in this stuff.
Yeah, that was
a great
me.
Story, huh? Yeah, it was you, yeah, all the way from Australia, probably at the age of, you know, 7. So, you know, so.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, though, you know, what I wanted to talk about is I think Darrell pretty much stole my thunder. Not to have two people in the row go at you, because that we can definitely not allow that, but I've been watching this storyline, and I don't think they know what they're doing. And I think it's ruined because of this whole you deserve it stuff. That, and I know you talked about this on Bruce Mitchell Audio, and Rich, I get your opinion, but that really annoyed me that Bray Wyatt, who's meant to be this maniacal manipulator, an evil person that supposedly relies on other people to do his dirty work, and the crowd is chanting to him, you deserve it. As far as I'm concerned, Bray Wyatt, the character, deserves nothing. Maybe the person behind Bray Wyatt, but not Bray Wyatt, the character. And that, to me, that just ruined the whole moment. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, a lot of what Darrell said, Bray Wyatt, maybe I could see cheering for Randy Orton if Bray Wyatt had won the title by nefarious means and had gotten his minions to do a lot of the dirty work, and he's out there speaking like it's all been him. But Bray Wyatt has actually overcome the odds the past couple of weeks. And we've already seen the Randy Orton play to the authority in a diminished role, and it did nothing for his career. Remember, he sort of limped into WrestleMania 30 as a weak character. We've got Bray Wyatt, who the fans want to get behind because they feel like he's been badly booked over the past 3 years, and he's very talented. People don't want to boo Randy Orton because he's a star. I think they recognize Luke Harper has got tremendous talent. They don't really want to boo him. And then you've got AJ Styles, who the people don't want to boo. And I think it all comes back to the fans getting invested more into the person behind the character than the actual character. And all it does is I think it further validates Wade Keller's point about trying to protect your character on social media and going all in on it. I'm not as high on SmackDown as a lot of other people are. I think the whole thing's a mess, and it's all got to do with the crowd being too smart for its own good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's tough with the crowd that sings along and chants those chants and you deserve it and all that and you know, sees it as they're reviewing a show or something, or, you know, as they're reviewing a show, not being involved in the show, not being emotionally involved in the show with that. But you also have the fans that are reacting to things before they think, and I think that's a judgment of it too. I don't know. Rich?
Well, this will be the time where one of my good friends, Chris, will be able to mark the timestamp that I joined the quote-unquote angry old man club when it comes to the crowd, because I was incensed when they chanted you deserve it at the cult leader and then booed John Cena for saying he didn't deserve it, he earned it. And that is really the crux of what happened. He beat the top two guys on SmackDown consecutively with his finisher, won the WWE title, and then came out and they said, great job pretending to win that match, buddy. And that it's the height of stupidity. And to have a guy that's a cult leader so good that the crowd falls for it, and no one on the announce team mentions that, hey, maybe you shouldn't root for the guy that is destroying people once they join his family, is also the height of irresponsibility, because they just say, oh, you're the Flyer Flies, and it, you know, you're part, he's got a hold on the crowd. And it's like, well, yeah, okay, show how that's a bad thing, not just that it's a thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And part of this is they've created this culture, and it's created in other places in wrestling too. But they're the flagship, so they're the ones that really have done this. And people, you know, we talk about it all the time, kind of book in their minds where they think everything should go, and judge the show by that, because they're not paying attention to the television. They're not really invested in it. And I know when I go to live shows, when I go to Raw, when I go to WWE stuff, when I go to Raw or SmackDown tapings and house shows, you can tell that a lot of the crowd isn't really watching and knowing what the storylines are. They react to seeing Randy Orton because he's Randy Orton and he's a star, not based on, you know, and they react to Bray Wyatt because you get to hold your phone up. Not based on whatever storyline's going on at that time. I think they're pulling in some of that, though. At least I hope so. I think they're good. Jason, can you hang with us as we do another plug?
Yeah, go for it.
Good deal.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, good deal. And as we said, with PW.com and PWTorch, VIP.com/VIP, we'll be covering the lives and deaths of Nicole Bass, George the Animal Steel, and Ivan Koloff this weekend. It won't be too much longer, so I look forward to talking to Wade Keller about all that. And it's kind of sad. I mean, it's definitely a sad. With Chavo Guerrero, you add that in, some things that really went along. But if you're thinking of Ivan Koloff, there is a guy in WWE that very much reminds me of him, and that's Rusev. But I also think that Rusev is. I just can't imagine Ivan Koloff with his blonde girlfriend sending out Polaroids of them on vacation or hanging out at a restaurant or what cute things that the Russian bear said to me yesterday. So it's I think Wade definitely talks about the use of social media by wrestling personalities, and that's part of it. Any comment on Jason on the three people that passed away just recently?
Yeah, obviously it's very sad. To be honest with you, I didn't see much of George Animal Steel, neither Ivan Koloff. It's just I haven't seen a lot of footage of him. But I will say, on a sort of similar note, I really enjoyed the interview. And I think you may have done it too with Wade. It may have been a couple of years or so ago, and maybe Wade could post it up, the interview with Nikita Koloff. I really did enjoy that interview. So hopefully, Wade could put that up, because I thought he came across very well and told some interesting stories about protecting his character, like when he got confronted in the supermarket by someone, something he said trying to justify why he doesn't speak Russian, I thought was a very clever thing to say. In relation to Nicole Bass, I only saw a little bit of her when she was in WWF, but I would point people to a tweet that Lance Storm put out, which I thought was very nice and very sweet. And, you know, you got to see a little bit behind the character. But, obviously very sad. But, the Nikita Koloff interview I thought was very well done. Well, you were part of that interview, weren't you, Bruce?
Yes, I was. So, yeah, I got to kind of see Nikita have his whole career in front of me. So that was, that was an interesting interview, particularly where he's at. And Ivan Koloff, I got to talk to a few months ago, and just kind of say, appreciate your career. I bought some stuff from him, which I'll buy you know, I'll buy a DVD from a legendary wrestler, particularly when I know the circumstances. And he was very soft-spoken, very cool, very nice man. And the times that I've had little conversations with him, it's been like that. So he was definitely kind of the elder statesman, the uncle of independent wrestling around here for a long time. And the guy, you know, and kind of on the hustle, you know, doing the Walmart appearances, doing, you know, he was a minister who would marry people and speak, and was a good speaker, as far as that kind of thing goes, and did that. So, I mean, he was an important, you know, but it's also part of the culture where we live in this world where we always have an enemy, and now it's ISIS or now it's terrorist or however you want to say it. But for decades, it was after World War II, it was the Cold War. It was the Russians and communists. And so he really carried a lot of heat playing that, even though he was Canadian and the Irish guy, Red McNulty. It was his first ring name. So interestingly enough, anything else you want to add to this? I mean, anything else you want to add to the call, Jason?
Yeah. Well, I've got one more point, but then I'll add on to that. And this is what I enjoy about your audio, because as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, all I've really grown up on is WWF, like, say, from 1990, 1989 onwards. So a lot of these, like prior to that or in other wrestling organizations, I don't know too much, to be honest with you, because I wasn't able to watch it. But, you know, listening to your audio and getting a good history lesson has been, very valuable. So that's my plug for VIP. If all you know is WWF, WWE, it's always great to listen to Bruce and Wade and other guests talk about in other federations and that. So, I look forward to listening to your part two and learning more about Ivan. But just, Bruce, just to get back more to current times, it's as we're talking about, like, wrestlers that are either miscast or the fans actually cheering for the performer and not the character, I feel the same way with Dolph Ziggler on SmackDown. I think a lot of people are cheering him because they feel like, yes, you are finally given something that you can sink your teeth into and we can get behind, because we want you to have an edge, because we don't like the way you've been booked over the years. Now I'm thinking they've got to be careful about the young up-and-coming baby faces they're going to put up against him, or else they're going to get booed, sort of similar to the Millionaires Club and the New Blood that they did in WCW back in the day. But in a way, I guess the perfect person for him to come up against, if you're going to boo someone from NXT, would be a Ty Dillinger, who does have a lot of a soft spot with the fans. He's been around for 10 or so years. I can see Ziggler playing off him well and the crowd getting behind Dillinger and not Ziggler. But I feel like they've got to toe the line there, because when they turn these baby faces who haven't been booked right into heels, the crowd's loyalty is with them. So I just feel like they've really got to handle that one correctly.
Yeah, I think that one of the things I keep talking about, having mechanics or having, you know, you're right about, if you feed baby faces to a hot heel who's getting an edge and the baby faces are cold and Dolph Ziggler's getting an edge and people have been watching him and they have a respect for his ability, if not, you know, his mid-card status, then you're going to do damage to that those new acts. And I think with Apollo Crews and you know, they did that. I mean, I thought that, you know, I thought it was a bad situation for them to be in. And who are they going to cheer? The two guys who can't beat the one guy? I mean, who did beat the one guy by double teaming him, or the guy that gets up off gets off still angry and beats up both of them? I mean, you know the feral nature of fighting. You know which way that's going to go. The psychology of that was all backwards. But if you had a guy who was just there to show off Dolph Ziggler instead of Dolph Ziggler showing off somebody else, and Ziggler could do a few little heel mannerisms and then build up to a match with a name babyface later on in a few weeks, I think I think there's more to be done that way. There's more with that. They've got so many acts they're trying to get over at the same time, and guys who might mean something later on down the line get sacrificed sometimes and get damaged and pegged before it's time to do something with them. Sami Zayn, I think, fits this too. It's just you know, there's there are ways around what they're doing, and they don't seem to want to, they don't seem to see it or be interested in it, or are too nervous about if we put up a match that's just Dolph Ziggler versus this guy, and you know who's going to win, we're going to lose ratings. And I understand that, but I think they're wrong. I think that they could, I think done the right way, it'd be more interesting. So there's some balance there with that. Rich, we haven't heard from you in a little bit. What's any further comments on this?
Well, that kind of talks, that kind of ties into what we at some point tonight are going to talk about too. With, I joked with Bruce about the idea of Dolph beating the Minoru team with ease at Elimination Chamber, and they just continued it on SmackDown. And I, there's the fact that the fans were more excited about him potentially seriously injuring Apollo Crews or putting himself in a position where, you know, Crews is going to be off TV, and Lord knows what they're going to do with the master of Lucha. But, you know, there's really something weird to be said about, while on one hand you're talking about Black History Month and the next month Latino History Month, you have the two lowest guys on the totem pole of color getting smoked by a guy who can't beat anyone one-on-one.
Yeah, there is. I mean, and that's when you don't have your symbolism, when you don't have everything in line in a natural way, then you start, you make those choices. Someone's going to see that. Someone's going to point to that, and that's you know, that's part of. I mean, this has been a very interesting, and I don't think good month for WWE as far as trying to show, you know, trying to show that they are with their audience, that they, you know, a large part of their audience is African American, a large part of their audience is Hispanic, and they, you know, they have made some ham-fisted moves this month, particularly with the Jackie Robinson deal and you know, and just, and this too. I mean, it's and even I don't know what the backstory is on Naomi suddenly getting a title shot and suddenly winning, but I am suspicious of Black History Month. I just think that, I wonder whether they went, we haven't had a African American champion in so long, and let's just use SmackDown Women, and she's a fairly popular act, and let's get her involved, and we'll use the excuse that she's, you know, her hometown is Tampa, is in Tampa where where WrestleMania is. And yeah, I, you know, you get these kind of tone deaf thuds that I think is going on here. So yeah, that's there. Jason, appreciate the call, and we'll hear from you next Friday. By the way, what time of the day is it for you in Australia?
Okay, well, I'm on the west coast of Australia, as you would say. So Perth, it is currently 8:42 in the morning. Beautiful Sunday morning here.
Oh wow! Oh, cool. Okay. You know what? That was a really dumb question, because when I think about it, we talk from the talk in the same hour. It's just Saturday, and Saturday and Sunday instead of Friday and Saturday. So God. Anyway, and yes, I teach school children about time.
Well, I was going to say, Bruce, we just found out the Earth was flat after several
hundred
years. So you know.
Not every player has to be smart. It's like thanks a lot, Kyrie. And I've been hearing from Carolina fans all day long about that, which gives me the excuse to say, way to go, Pitt. So happy
with
that.
Yeah, they pull.
Can I say something to that? Not to put my foot in it, and I probably shouldn't be bragging about this, although I was bragging about it when he hit that big shot in Game 7, but Kyrie did spend some time here in Australia.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, yeah.
So I'm hoping our school system didn't teach him that.
I'm assuming that when he went to Australia, he went to sleep like Mr. T would in the A-Team and would just wake up in Australia and just figure, you know, they hit the corner and fell right on it.
Yeah, I mean, he's been to the ends of the earth. Maybe he's like looked over the end, and I don't know. Yeah, that was and there was something else too that he just said that was just like, as part of, you know, the moon landing was fake, and then there was another one that was just, it was just like, the aliens. I just kind of like winced when it's like, they're aliens. Well, you know, how do you think that they have all this information for these fictional television shows and movies and books? And I'm like, I don't know, imagination? I, you know, I couldn't come up with an explanation for that. And it's like,
Well, okay. I mean, if he, and this is something, I mean, this is something I would usually jump into with Travis on the East Coast cast, but if you believe in aliens and you believe in a flat Earth, how do you explain the faster-than-light travel it would have required for aliens to get to Earth?
You know what, that is, seriously, I mean, I'm not a big into the alien theory or, like, follow it all that much, but just the sheer amount of distance, that's the part that I've always, like, kind of gone, you know, I could see where we haven't been visited, I could see where there's life somewhere, but, because the distance is just so large, you know, just so vast, not large, but long and vast, and so, yeah, that's, I'm sure Travis would, you know, come up with some more evidence than I would, you know, archaeological evidence that I would know. So, all right, Jason, appreciate the call, and we will hear from you next
Thanks,
week,
guys.
I hope. All right. All right, one more commercial, and we will be right back.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
Yeah, so getting heckled by Twitter, that's great. I appreciate that. Rich. So let's go to, if you've been waiting online, I think this is another call. Let's try it. If you've been waiting online, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
Hi, this is Mark from Ontario. How are you guys tonight?
Hi, Mark. You didn't, you're showing up on mine with a different number than last time. So, okay.
About that. And for work, I think I just saw Jason from Australia in my backyard. He's coming for you guys.
Yeah. It's gonna take a little while, but yeah, he'll be there.
My question is, and you kind of referenced Bailey and Naomi earlier, if your booking prediction for Fastlane where Goldberg goes over KO, there's no long-term champions going into Mania. And to me, that looks like really short-term booking or people just changed in their minds. What's your thought and rationale behind that?
I think that I talked about this on VIP with Wade Keller. He was asking me about did I think that Vince McMahon, because I've been more positive about some of the major booking, some of the predictable booking that they've done coming into WrestleMania. A year ago, using my own words against me, you called for Vince McMahon to step down as head of creative, and I answered it in a certain way about where everything was going. And you can listen to it as a VIP member, but I just to get it down a little faster, Roman Reigns. It's going to end up with Roman Reigns. And so I think it's building up Brock Lesnar to end up with Roman Reigns is what everything, you know, the big move where Lesnar gets beaten by, gets beaten by Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns, you know, gets over in the role that they want him over as the face of the company, babyface. And, you know, my answer to that is Vince McMahon still is not in tune with what's going on. That's part of it. Rich, you want to chime in?
I think with long-term champions, the one thing we have to keep in mind with WrestleMania, just like when the complaints come up about the part-timers, I don't think they care. They just want to get to the reset of the quote-unquote season to set up what they really want to do, which is whomever they want to get the title to by SummerSlam. So I think with that in mind, getting the title onto a Goldberg by proxy getting that in, you know, to Brock, or maybe getting it to Becky Lynch, maybe not. Maybe getting it to Sasha, maybe not. Maybe getting it to Bayley, maybe not. At the end of the day, they have an idea of what they want to do, and I think more often than not, sadly, we're along for the ride, whether we like it or not. Like, you know, when it comes to the Universal title, I've resigned myself that by SummerSlam or thereabouts, Roman Reigns will be the champion again. And I enjoy his matches, but if they're going to continue to cast him in the way they are, they're not helping him. And if they don't see that, we're just going to be forced to watch the same home video until mom and dad figure out, I don't want to see the Disney trip when I was 10 years old for the 50th time.
Yeah, I mean, but you're gonna get it. So that part to me is this divorce between the audience and a big portion of the audience and the creative is at the hands of the person who's the last person to make the decisions, and that's Vince McMahon. And all these, I've liked the more predictable parts of what I'm seeing, but I still see a lot of. Wavering and what happened 2 weeks ago doesn't seem to matter now, and we're going to change directions. We're going to change directions again, and just not. And I think that's a real problem. I think McMahon. There's never been anybody to take wrestling where he's taken as far as success goes, as far as money goes. But there's also never been anybody on the creative tiller that was doing a good job at the age that he's at, and that's I think it kind of shows in some stuff. I mean, it's still strange. So Mark, what else you got, Mike?
Just one last thing. Thanks, and that was good perspective, by the way. How would you rate historically the Festival of Friendship for a breakup? I guess historically, because I think they kind of gave the nod to the barbershop by throwing Jericho through the TV. So how would you rate them, that specific breakup against others historically? Because I think we're going to be talking about this one for a while.
Yeah. Rich, go, and I'll chime in.
Sure. I would say I am enthralled with it because it was something we all saw coming as far as the breakup. I didn't see it coming that night. I thought it was going to be something where it happened as a result of him screwing up the title defense against Goldberg. But from the moment, I got chills the moment he said, why is my name on this list? And the innocence, and that goes back to Jericho. A few months ago on Talk is Jericho mentioning how seriously he takes his off season away from wrestling, going to acting classes, doing all these extra things. It paid off in that scene. And then to have Kevin, with none of that stuff, go from the jovial friend to a sociopath with just the looks he gave and dropping the belt. And then shades of the Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty breakup where he throws him through the Jeritron. It was amazing. And I think it was one of the better moments in terms of a breakup or turn. I think it's far more evocative of gasps and surprised than say even Seth Rollins is, but I would say it's up there. I don't want to overstate my remembrance of some of the other moments in history, but I would definitely say it has to be for me in my top five.
Yeah, I had mixed reactions to it, and I'll talk more about it with Wade. But I don't mean to do that, but I have a lot of reactions to it. But I thought. I definitely liked that moment of your stomach dropping, of Jericho's stomach dropping, of why is this my name, and the mechanics of everybody sees it's Kevin Owens' list except him, and it dawns on people, like the tragedy is dawning on everybody before it dawns on him, and there's a sense of horror with that. I liked that. I didn't really like Goldberg and all the silliness before the statue. I thought all that was really heelish. I thought all of that was he's a doofus who's or he's just out of touch, and here's his best friend worried to death about Bill Goldberg beating him for the championship, and he's out there with all this stuff and scaring him, with Goldberg and doing all that. I didn't think that. I think what you want is sympathy for the guy who, for the heel that's about to turn baby, about to get the crap kicked out of him because he's about to turn babyface, and just really hatred for, hatred for Kevin Owens. And I thought Owens' character almost was justified in it, and that he was
that this guy was getting in his way, was screwing up, and he was facing the biggest challenge of his life, and he needed to, like, you know, he needed to stop it. And one part I did like about this was they gave you that little moment of Owens talking to Triple H.
Yeah.
And that's something I want to see followed up on before the celebration of friendship. And that's what I wanted to see followed up on, is did Triple H, you know, approve of this? What did he think? And, you know, and really come back with Jericho doing a really good babyface thing. But I thought it was reminiscent of This Is Your Life, The Rock, that kind of comedy that's kind of ridiculous and kind of stupid. I guess they wanted it to be fun, and it was fun in certain ways. But, yeah, I had mixed emotions about it. I like the turn. The ultimate turn to me was the one that was just tremendously well done was, and you can find this on YouTube, and just the big turn of 1980 is, and it's, you know, it was used to teach for many years at WWE Developmental, Ole Anderson turning on Dusty Rhodes. And you get the passion of the traitor. You get the straight man of the traitor Ole Anderson. You get the straight man Gordon Solie, and you get the late Ivan Koloff celebrating, you know, this dastardly thing. And then you get Dusty Rhodes with the final word. You know, Dusty Rhodes about how he's going to get revenge, and you know, you want to see the match. I mean, and it's everybody, as far as promo work goes and as far as talking goes, at their absolute peak. And so that's one that I like. But I very much just like a little more simple, a little more somebody got betrayed, and not just I'm sitting there watching it going, I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to – because Festival of Friendship to me kind of gave it away. But I thought it wasn't enough that you didn't want him to do it. You know, it was kind of – to me, I thought Owens was right too much of this. I mean, it's okay for the heel to be right in some of it, but it was just too much for that. But I do agree with y'all that this is going to be something people remember. And in that sense, this is a success. And I think it does launch this match at WrestleMania pretty well. I think that's a good deal.
Yeah, one of the things I really took away from it was, and I think Matt McCarthy put his finger on a pulse when he did the interview with Wade earlier this week. I took it as Jericho doing the stupid stuff, but then right before the turn, opening up and doing what Wade's mentioned a lot of times he wants to see with Roman, the vulnerability of mentioning, I realize I'm at the end of my career, and this year was one of the best years I've ever had, and I have you to thank for it. Despite all the dastardly things I did, I feel like it was good because I really got a friend out of this. And
that's
worked.
A good point. You know, thinking about it, that's a good point because, yeah, he did kind of get out of idiot Jericho and then into something that sounded sincere before he got stabbed in the back.
Yeah, he's like, you know, I'm a goof. I get to goof off with you and we get to do vicious things. And it was almost a situation where it was honor amongst thieves until you realize you can never have that.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I had some mixed emotions about it, but there were some – And you were right about, and it sounds like I'm more and more positive about it. I don't know that I am, but you were right about Owens as far as Owens was getting more and more. You could see he was getting more and more fed up. And then there was that moment where it looked like he had a little bit of regret. And then he didn't have the regret. And I think about, actually, Ole Anderson was involved in this one too, but I think about, and these are old, but I think about the Four Horsemen kicking Sting out. And a lot of times, things that Ric Flair, the heel, was involved in, there would be that moment because he was really popular, actually, where they would give you that moment of Ric Flair's not going to break Dusty Rhodes' leg. Ric Flair's not going to kick Sting out, and then he would do it. You know, then it was like you could see the sympathy in the heel for the guy who's about to get stomped, and then that decision of screw it, I'm going to kill him. And you would get that. And so that kind of turn. I don't know that. I think it's like all this is entertaining, but I don't know if it's got the emotion in it that you're going to want for this kind of grudge match. And it's going to be. It's not so to me. It's not so much now. Owens' explanation, but Jericho. Like if Jericho comes back and really has, and I'm sure they've thought about it, really has a strong comeback and after Owens, I think that's important. And then it'd be interesting to see who wins the match, because if Jericho's been with WWE for several months now, usually he doesn't stay this long. If he loses to Owens and then goes away, how much this thing has for it, because the babyface going for the revenge match, losing and then leaving, that can and then just not losing the fight and leaving it doesn't do a whole lot for either side. I don't think, except for big match at WrestleMania.
Right.
Cool. So appreciate the phone calls. Appreciate everybody I'm listening on, and as we said, and I'm still kind of got a little bit of new technology to deal with. The email, we will have that next week. I was missing one little piece to go get that. Some things changed over in my software, so I apologize for that. And I apologize for yesterday for people that were listening. And I appreciate you holding on for this. And, Rich, thanks for coming on Saturday night. And I hope that, like I said, I was, Pitt Panthers helped out my team, so I was happy to see that too. Everything's getting tight as far as ACC basketball goes. But how was the Lego movie?
It was good. I think they did too good a job of explaining on the parent level and the kids level the pathology of being Batman, because my son was upset at the end when he realized Batman doesn't have a family, and the family he does have, he constantly pushes away.
Oh, wow.
Like, it went deep, at the end,
yeah.
Trey's in tears at the end. He's like, Daddy, are you going to leave, Batman's family? I was like, wait, no. I know they went to see.
Oh, God.
Oh man. It was so meta on top. I was just crushed because I'm like, yeah, they did go to see a show, and it was The Mask of Zorro, and this is, shoot. I'm like, no.
Wow.
I'm going to be here.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. But I can see where that does, yeah. I always think that when I see kids' movies through the educational lens, when I'm, either when I'm going with when I'm in crowd to go with my family, or I don't see them on my own, I'll put it like that, and or part of school, and I'm always kind of like the manipulation of parents and kids in the storyline to push on kids' buttons, it always kind of bothers me a little bit, and particularly no dads, and that's, but wow, I mean, yeah, your son is, three or four, so that's not where you want him particularly, so, yeah, but, put your arm around him, he'll be fine, so.
Oh, yeah, we played Pokemon, walked in the park for a little bit, and he was good, but I could definitely tell he was understanding at a level I was not prepared for. Like the dynamics of how Batman, Robin, Knight, all that stuff. And they did a little too good a job of giving them the breadcrumbs, whereas in prior years and prior movies, there's just enough of that ceiling where the kids won't be able to get it. But I think kids are so sophisticated now. I mean, we were outside of the movie theater, and the poster has, 20 Batman rogues, and he knew 15 of them.
Wow, yeah.
And I was like, wait, how do you know Clayface? How do you know Clock King? How do you know Egghead?
Gosh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I noticed that too with my kids. And, I have a lot of superhero stuff in my classroom. And, yeah, they know more. Yeah, there's definitely more background. And it's interesting where it comes from. And a lot of it's the cartoons. But, they can pick out more stuff. So, good conversation. Appreciate everybody listening, downloading this. And we will be back next Friday and be back with Bruce Mitchell Audio Show Part 2.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members, and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.